opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
Good day, everyone, and welcome again to another edition of Boomer Generation Radio. This is your host, Richard Address, coming to you from the beautiful studios of WWDB AM 860 here in kind of like a gloomy, rainy Philadelphia today. And we're streaming live on WWDBAM.com. This portion of Boomer Generation Radio being brought to you by Kendall, a system of not-for-profit communities and services advocating for and empowering older adults to reach their full potential. Kendall is committed to working with others to together transform the experience of aging. And to learn more about Kendall, which is K-E-N-D-A-L, we invite you to visit them at www.discoverkendall.org or call them toll-free at 888-759-0128. That's 888-759-0128. A reminder that you can contact the show at boomergenerationradio@gmail.com. And we invite you to go on our Facebook page and like us at Boomer Generation Radio on Facebook. And through the magic of electronics and our producer, Tim, this morning, Karen Venable. Karen, are you there?
I am.
Hi. First of all, you're calling from California, I know, and thank you for getting up so very, very early to join us here in Philly.
You're welcome. Actually, I'm in Portland, Oregon.
That's even better. That's even better. Say one of my favorite cities. Say hello to Portland and some really good friends of mine in Portland.
Well, Alan, training here too.
What else is new? Karen is the founder and CEO of Roommates for Boomers, and we've invited her to come on board to talk about this very, very interesting trend that seems to be growing across the country, alternative housing arrangements, or basically this idea of, as boomers age out, this idea that we're not quite ready yet to go into those facilities that perhaps our parents went into. So let's start with the basics, Karen. Again, thank you for joining us. What is Roommates for Boomers, and why is Roommates for Boomers?
Roommates for Boomers is what we call the Golden Girls Meets Match.com. It's a way for women boomers specifically to experience shared housing. And I started the website based on my own experience. I was divorced. A friend of mine asked me to move in with her. I did, and that was about 10 years ago. And what happened is that I suddenly became more animated and happy and started talking to my other friends in similar situations. And like many people right now, we're all wondering what to do next. So based on that, I did some research. I have a business background. I looked at what was out there for people my age, and there was not anything very appealing. There was some government-sponsored programs for shared housing, but nothing that was appealing to our population. So I started the website. It's a national website. It connects women who have homes with women who need homes, and it has a pretty detailed description of a dialogue that you go through trying to understand, you know, are you a smoker? Do you have grandkids? You know, what do you want out of life? Do you need your own bedroom? So that matches people together. And then they meet and begin the process of seeing if they're compatible.
So the first question that pops up after that explanation is, this is just for women right now, or has it morphed into just both sexes?
It's just for women right now. That population is the biggest among the population of people in this age group. There's about 50 million right now, and half of that is women. So we decided that just to start with, as a starting point, to start with women. But yes, it will go towards men at some point in the future.
Do you have a statistic? First of all, how long has the website been? How long has Roommates for Boomers been up and running? How many years?
Oh, well, we've been in the beta stage. Let me give you a little bit of background about
right.
that.
Sure.
We're a grassroots movement. Having said that, we partner with national organizations. The national organizations are the Transition Network and the Village to Village Community. Both of those organizations are trying to take us into the next generation of a better living environment for everyone. I'm not sure if you know Village to Village, but it started about 10 years ago. There were 150 villages, and this year alone, there are 150 more. And what that means is, in the case of San Francisco, for example, there are two village communities. You set up a kind of a grid system in a neighborhood community in San Francisco, for example, and the people in that community pay a fee, $600 if you're single, $1,200 if you're married, and that enables you to have people help you drive to places, take your pet, pick up your prescriptions, all these services to help people age in place in an attempt to avoid, you know, the kind of the next phase of assisted living communities. So those, so in our attempt to partner with them, what we were doing is adding credibility to this movement because people want to make sure that it's a safe situation. So anyway, we started in the beta phase where we worked with those groups. We used their database. They were able to join for free, and we went back and forth trying to make sure that this everything was what it should be before we went public. We went not public, but national. We went national beginning March 1st, so we're still building our database.
So it's March 1st of 2015.
Yes, that's correct.
Right. So speaking of the village community, about a couple of months ago, actually on January 20th, we had Natalie Glucia, who is the director of Village to Village, on the show, really talking about, again, the Village to Village movement and how that's growing. So this is another reason why I really wanted to talk to you, because these things seem to be meshing together. There seems to be this trend, this movement around the country.
Well, now, Natalie and I are working together. We're getting ready to do a webinar. We are her national shared housing resource.
Right.
What that means, okay, so I'm assuming you know what that means.
But go ahead. Now, explain it to the audience. Go ahead.
Okay, we'll be a resource button on their website. So if you go to the Village to Village National and you look for resources, you look under that and then shared housing, it'll say Roommates for Boomers. And you go to that link to get to our website.
So, like you said,
the Village to Village movement and all these other movements, we're aligned with four different organizations right now because it's such a necessary thing, and people are realizing how disenfranchised our age group has been, and they want to do things to help build community.
So when you're talking about our age group, quote unquote, the you're beginning to track this, I imagine. What is the basic age parameters of the people now who are getting in touch with you for Roommates for Boomers? Are there people in their 50s, 60s, 80s, 90s,
yes,
or all the above?
It's about 55 to 70. We're really not trying to eliminate people. It's just that's the largest demographic. So it's between 55 and 70.
So 55 and 70 gives you the first stage, the real bulk of the first stage of the baby boom generation, which is obviously why we're having this conversation. So the I want to be involved with this. Let's just say I'm a woman in that age demographic. I hear about you. Walk me through the process. We're speaking with Karen Venable, the founder and CEO of Roommates for Boomers, part of this really emerging trend in alternative housing as for boomers as we begin to age. So, Karen, I want to participate in this. I've heard about this. Where do I go? What's the website? What's my process? Walk me through what's going to happen if I want to get some more information.
All right. It's called Roommates and then number4boomers.com. You get on the website and it says, what's your zip code? So, you know, you start to narrow in on where do you want to live. then when you get that, you go into, I have a place to live or I need a place to live. And based on which one of those you click, it takes you into a questionnaire. It's an extensive questionnaire, which we did to try and filter through exactly what it is you need, because this is a scary process. I mean, it says things like, what is your political affiliation? Do you like to do yoga? Do you like to listen to music? You know, are you a stay-at-home? Do you need your own bedroom, bathroom? What are your eating habits? Do you work full-time? Really a lot of, like, smoking and drinking, trying to filter out everything that we can to go to the next step, where then they're searching the database. So based on their zip code, they're looking at people that are in their area, and then all of that is free. You do that until you find someone that you want to actually get in contact with, and that's when you pay your fee.
So what's the fee?
It's $29.99 a month, and it is for 3 months, but you can, after 1 month, we estimate that it takes about 3 months, because you go through the process of you're looking at the database. Then once you get past that stage, you start to talk to people on the phone. Sometimes people will Skype each other, which we're strongly encouraging. That ability is not up on our website yet, but, you know, that's another way to filter people before you meet them. And then the final step is meet them in a, you know, a safe place, a coffee house or whatever, and begin the process of getting to know each other. So that takes a while. So we estimate that it's going to take 3 months. We charge you for the first month, and then you can opt out at any time.
So the questionnaire, I mean, that it's, I guess this is like the Match.com or the dating services, like you mentioned at the beginning of the show.
That is what it's like. They ask questions like, what color is your hair and how much do you weigh? And not to trivialize that.
No.
We ask more of, you know, do you just the things that you really, you know, what's your education level? What is your job? What is your income then? We ask questions like that. Are you divorced? Even if you're gay, we ask that question.
So there's an opportunity for all time. So, I mean, I would imagine this is, there may be some people listening saying, well, it sounds great, but I'm a little uneasy. I mean, I'm doing this. What are the safeguards? I mean, suppose all things, somebody can be anybody online, and what are the safeguards? Do you ask questions about money, financial practices too?
No, we absolutely don't ask that. That's something we advise people to get, to do a criminal background check and get a credit check.
Wow.
on everyone that they get in contact with. You know, that's just the way it is right now. And, you know, this is all about having a meaningful relationship in your future life. And it's just, you know, it's our society as it is today.
Can I ask you? I'm going to ask you. It's my show. On the questionnaire, given the fact of this demographic of you know, baby boomers and everything, do you include questions about sexuality, sexual practices, et cetera, so that, you know,
no.
You do not?
No.
Okay.
No.
So this is something.
Well, I mean, maybe you should be more specific. Ask me a question. I mean, I've said, you know, if you're gay or that's perfectly. I mean, we don't discriminate against any sexual relationship.
No. I understand that. It's not sexual orientation. But suppose you have somebody who's much more sexually active as opposed to somebody who's really not and has no interest in it for a whole variety of reasons. Is that something you would hope that they would talk about when they meet?
Absolutely, but not on our website. I just think that is too taboo for most people, you know, in a web setting.
Okay, so we're talking with Karen Venable, the founder and CEO of Roommates for Boomers. We'll be right back to Karen in a minute. But I also want to remind you that this week is a very important week. We talked about this a year ago exactly. This as National Healthcare Decision Day winds its way on the day after Income Tax Day, which rumor has it is very soon. The idea of talking about life choices and what matters most is something that a lot of us think about but rarely do. And our friends at Samaritan Healthcare and Hospice really have asked us to remind you that, you know, if think about it, if a surgery or accident or serious illness prevented you from speaking for yourself, would you or your loved ones know your wishes? Would they know yours? Samaritan Healthcare and Hospice says now is the time to think, to talk, and to act, to think about what you would want if you couldn't speak, to talk about your wishes with those who matter to you, and to act by writing them down. As you know, experts agree that the right place to have these delicate conversations, or at least to begin these conversations, is really around the table, your kitchen table, your dining room table, in the family room, not in the ICU. Think of these talks as your gift to loved ones, to communicate your wishes, to prevent family burdens, and to avoid disagreements during crisis times. And if you already have an advance directive, we invite you to find out today how talking the talk goes far beyond the legal living will with your lawyer that your lawyer may have helped you create, especially as the laws keep changing and options keep becoming more available to us. So for tips and resources to help you begin these timely conversations, we invite you to visit SamaritanNJ.org. That's SamaritanNJ.org/think-talk-act. SamaritanNJ.org/think-talk-act. That's Samaritan Healthcare and Hospice here in the local Philadelphia, Greater Philadelphia, Southern New Jersey area. We're back with Karen Venable, the founder and CEO of Roommates for Boomers, who has graciously gotten up early in Portland and called in to talk about this growing trend of various types of housing. There was a very recent survey done by Merrill Lynch, an Age Wave survey, that talked about this freedom threshold that they surveyed. It comes around age 61. Where the majority of people all of a sudden feel free to choose where they live, what I imagine fits right into your demographic about people deciding either I'm an empty nester or through various family orientations or changes. This is my time. This is a free time now.
It's a very important time in our lives. You know, it's like we've done most of our jobs in child rearing and career building. And for many, you know, they're looking at what to do next, which is like, where do I live? Who do I want to be around? Do I want to have another career? And a lot of people consider, do I want to be near my kids? Do I want to live in the sun? I mean, it's all those questions that everyone asks. And so, what we found is that people move back and forth to be with their children. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, the main trend that we're finding right now is that people want to age in place.
Right.
And, you know, having said that, what that means is that if you own your own home and you can't afford to stay there by yourself, or you need some help, or you just want to help someone else, it's the perfect situation to have someone that either needs to move or can't afford to live alone, you know, move in with someone that's got a place to live.
Let's talk about one thing, because you alluded to it a couple of times. Let's suppose, for the sake of argument, here I am in Southern New Jersey, where I live, and I'm in a position where I'm going to take advantage of Roommates for Boomers, but I don't want to stay in Southern New Jersey, the Greater Philadelphia. I visited, let's for the sake of argument say, Scottsdale, and I want to get out of here in the cold during the winter, and I don't want to go to Florida. I'm going to go to the Southwest. So can I go on your website and then plug in, this is the zip code that I want to go to? Is that part of the process?
That's absolutely part of the process. You just, you know, Google Scottsdale or wherever you want to go in Arizona and find the zip code and begin to start looking around. You know, you have to be smart about it. There are different neighborhoods within a community,
right,
and
right.
you have to figure that out. So that's a little bit difficult, but not impossible. And then you can ask us questions about, what do you think of this community? So there's a place in our our questionnaire that says near universities, near bus lines, livable community, community that likes kids, things like that, to try and help you get a match that is good for you. Live near downtown. So, you know, it's geared towards finding a place anywhere, which many, many people are doing. And I might add that we have gotten emails from people in Israel, in Mexico, in Canada. We have a lot of people looking at us from China. We've been interviewed by the largest newspaper in Japan because they've got a huge boomer generation, and
right,
they're wondering what to do with their generation as well.
You mentioned the international thing. So it just triggered this thing. Suppose I don't want to stay in the States, and, you know, I've been on the cruise, and I was in, I'm just going to say Panama, because it was in the news this week. And I know that they and some of the other Central American countries are looking for people to come and live there, for retirees. Are you set up to do this stuff internationally, or is this really just local, the United States right now?
It's just the United States right now.
What do you think is behind all this? Why is this trend beginning to really gain so much traction right now amongst boomers? What's going on? Do we just want to do anything at all to stay out of a nursing home or a facility, as it's called?
You know, I think that's the motivation for some people, but not all people. I mean, what we're trying to do is make this an aspirational kind of lifestyle choice. And by that, I mean, you know, when you went to college or you moved away from home, you might have found some roommates. You moved in together. You created this new lifestyle for yourself. You know, you did things together. You cooked together. You went to movies together. And we're trying to show that this is a new movement. You know, it's like, you know, a few years ago, people hadn't heard of organic food or recycling or alternative medicine, and now that's mainstream information. So I think it's just a matter of showing people, letting people get comfortable with the shared house movement. And, you know, by the way, communities all over the world, one of the places that I looked at to determine what was available was shared housing, and it came out that France had a lot of services around that. So it's been an international way of living that we're just late to adopt.
Oh, no, I think it makes eminently great sense. I mean, in a practical, in a whole variety of different ways. First of all, it speaks to the thing that you spoke about at the top of the show. There's a socialization factor that is very, very powerful. It's sort of like the anti-aloneness, which is debilitating on every single level, not only emotionally, spiritually, psychologically, and financially. Let's just play this out. So I've gone on the website. I've gone through the process. I've paid my fee. I've Skyped or met, you know, somebody that it seems to be compatible. We've set up the time. I'm moving to their place, or they're moving to my place. We're setting this whole thing up. Is there then an agreement, like a roommate
Absolutely.
Agreement? Talk about that real quickly.
Okay. Well, let me back up for a second. We recommend before you actually move in to, like, go away for a weekend and give it a real try before you're committing to moving your goods. And sometimes we say keep the place that you have if you can and move into the new place for maybe 2 weeks. I mean, this is a serious business, and we want it to work as well as possible. So you do have an agreement. There on our website, under the resources, there's like a contract that people set up. How much rent you pay, how do you deal with food, and like how do you clean up? Do you pay for someone to come in and clean up, or who has different responsibilities? You know, where do you park your car? It's just everything you can think
wow.
of. All the way down from, you know, who cleans the bathroom.
It strikes me in studying the movement a little bit in preparation for this show and the other show. It was in many ways, like you were talking about, it's like going to college and finding your roommate, or when you get out of college and you live, you know, with a couple other people as you're starting out your career, or, you know, you're involved in a relationship and you move in together just to almost test the waters and see if you're really compatible. It's it's a very, very powerful. And I think personally, I think this is a great idea. I think this is a wonderful, wonderful thing for, and I wish you great success with this. Before we're running out of time for this segment, real fast, again, somebody is interested in pursuing this shared housing concept. They want more information from Roommates for Boomers. How do we do that? The website, phone number, etc.
Everything's on the website. It's Roommates for the number 4 boomers.com. I might add that we have like tons of people reading our blog, and I think that's the way they start to look at the issues surrounding this. Are you lonely? What do you do? And, you know, do you want to travel together? So that's a good way to segue into, am I comfortable with this kind of situation? So once you get on the website, you look to be sure to look at the resource guide, because that tells you things to look for. And then, you know, you sign up. Just as I said, I've got a place to share. I need a place to share. You go through the agreement. The description of what you have and what you need. Then you're exposed to the people in the database and your zip code, and you start from there.
So we've been talking with Karen Venable, the founder and CEO of Roommates for Boomers, part of this very, very exciting trend for our generation about shared housing and the shared housing movement. And Karen, we really thank you very much, first of all, for getting up so early out in Portland, and say hello to Portland.
Well, you're welcome. I'm so supportive of this movement, and I appreciate you having me on your show, Richard.
Oh, no, it's great. It's great. This is great. I wish you great luck, and hopefully maybe we'll like to check back with you in several months, maybe a half a year from now, and see how this is booming and growing. I think you're right at the crest of a tremendously exciting wave, so I wish you just much happiness and joy and lots of good luck in this movement. Thank you very much for joining us here on Boomer Generation Radio.
Thank you so much.
We want to mention another good friend of the show, the Hecht Investment Group of Janie Montgomery Scott, which provides concierge financial consulting and planning services, which use a formal investment process as their foundation. Clients receive frequent communication and rapid response to questions. There are no needs, as you know, greater than our own when it comes to personal financial planning. And the Hecht Investment Group provides experience, guidance, and an efficient management process that is important in today's environment. Additionally, Hecht and his team can assist you in connecting to the investment banking department, who specialize in assisting middle market companies to achieve their strategic goals. We invite you to contact the Hecht Investment Group toll-free. Their number is 855-289-2168. That's 855-289-2168. Or visit them at the hechtinvestmentgroup.com. Hecht Investment Group is also on Twitter, LinkedIn, and on Facebook. And they're part of Janie Montgomery Scott, which is a member of the New York Stock Exchange, FINRA, and SIPC. You're listening to Boomer Generation Radio here on WWDB AM 860 here in Greater Philadelphia, streaming live on WWDBAM.com. And again, we invite you to contact the show at BoomerGenerationRadio@gmail.com and go to our Facebook page and like us on the Facebook page. That's Boomer Generation Radio on Facebook. And we're going to be back with our next guest, Kathy Ciolek from the University of Delaware, right after this little sort of like mellow musical break for a kind of a gloomy, rainy day here in Philly. Welcome back to Boomer Generation Radio here on WWDB AM 860 and streaming live on WWDBAM.com. This portion of Boomer Generation Radio is being brought to you by Kendall Outreach, serving the field of aging by raising public awareness and advocacy around important issues of older adults through education and training and comprehensive, safe, and individualized long-term care practices. Kendall Outreach has been sharing Kendall's approach to quality care with consumers, advocates, providers, government agencies, and related organizations since 1989. And to learn more, we invite you to visit kendall.org. That's K-E-N-D-A-L.org. And click on Outreach. That's Kendall Outreach. Welcome back to Boomer Generation Radio. And our second segment, and we are very pleased to welcome from the University of Delaware, Kathy Ciolek, Assistant Professor and Director of Clinical Education at UD down in Delaware. Kathy, are you there?
I am. How are you?
Hi. How? Hi. Is it raining down there today?
Yeah, that's right. I think we're getting a little more rain even than you guys.
Oh, it's like gloomy. And one of the mystery of life questions, we were talking about this with the producers and Barry Reisman before, is when it rains in our area, traffic goes bonkers. I don't understand it, but that's another story for another mystery of life question. We're here to talk to Kathy about actually something very, very exciting, and that is how to stay active and the role of activity and movement and physical exercise as we age. This comes up a lot in many of our programs and many of our conversations about the importance of just getting that body moving and mobility. What you teach this? Walk me through your involvement. Why? How did you get involved with this, Kat?
So I've been a physical therapist for about a little over 25 years, and almost all of my career has been particularly in working with older adults. So I fell in love with working with this population as a healthcare professional, and have now since moved into academia, where I still do a little bit of part-time clinical care. But my current job is working, and I teach in our geriatrics curriculum, so that all of our physical therapy students in our doctoral program here have the opportunity to learn from my expertise about working with older adults.
So talk to me about why it's absolutely essential as we begin to grow a little older that it's even more essential to keep the body moving. What's going on here? Why?
Well, you know, it's been really interesting because what people think of as aging, you know, that little bit slow down in how you're moving, and a lot of the sequelae that are people think of as what is just normal aging, really we actually think now is more due to limited mobility. So the choice to sometimes not be as active, or as their job and life changes in retirement, to not keep up with being as active as they were in younger periods, is actually why we think we see these symptoms of aging. There's a lot of pathology that seems you know, there's some things that certainly we can't avoid, but we know that being more physically active can lower your risk for diabetes, lower your risk for heart disease, high blood pressure, as well as certain issues with osteoarthritis, and may even have some impact on cognition.
Really? Well, I've seen some studies about that, and the idea, of course, in a lot of these articles, this idea, this really important link between don't just sit there, get up, walk. And so we're seeing lots of different studies of how many hours, or how many minutes, a week. Last week, Dr. Laskin, who's a geriatrician, a good friend of the show, and he comes on about once a quarter. We got into this towards the very, very end of the show. He suggested that on his practice is dealing a lot with boomers and older adults, 150 minutes per week, of physical exercise, and it doesn't mean running marathons. He was
absolutely.
Well, what does that mean? And do you agree with that number, or is it just?
Yeah, that number is what's put out by the American College of Sports Medicine and the Center for Disease Control, so that they've kind of worked together to kind of come up with what is the minimum number.
That's always a minimum. That's a good thing to know.
Yeah. So 150 minutes over the course of a week. Typically, we look at that as about 5 days a week of doing 30 minutes, but certainly you can break it up however you want. They look at it as a minimum of 10 minutes at a time to really, because it takes at least 10 minutes to get your heart rate up and sustain it for that long. But it doesn't have to be like what we think of as swimming or aerobics or running or anything at that. It can be, you know, pushing the lawnmower for 10 minutes, mowing your own lawn, doing housework at a pace where you're working at what we consider a moderate intensity. So, you know, where I use a scale of 0 to 10, it's called a Borg scale. People may have seen it. But when we ask how hard are you working on that 0 to 10 scale, it should be at about a 5 to 6 level.
Heart rate things. Mm-hmm. That's a silly heart rate things. Is there a scale or is there a judgment about how, because, you know, you go on a treadmill at a gym and if you go to some of these gyms and they'll have charts that if you're a certain age, there's like 20% of your maximum heart rate and 80% of your maximum heart rate. I guess if you're any more, you like die. Is that important to get your heart rate moving, or is it just getting up and doing something more important?
Ideally, it is important to get your heart rate moving, but, you know, simply getting up does that to some degree. It's probably going to do it more. Just a normal walking is probably in that 20 to 30% of your heart rate max.
Mm-hmm.
Those scales are constructed on a couple different methods to get there. But, you know, working at that 5 to 6 on that 10 scale should put you in about what we consider a 50 to 60% of your heart rate max. That's really where we consider a moderate intensity exercise to live. Now, you can work higher at closer to 70 to 80, and you don't need to get as many minimal minutes because you're working harder. But for most people, that 50 to 60% is our goal. And certainly, you know, if you have other conditions, there are some things we take into account with that.
Right. That's assuming. And then it's always, I guess, the wise thing is before you do anything, you consult your physician to make sure that your body can tolerate this. And
absolutely. Because, you know, interestingly enough, the guidelines for somebody with hypertension or high blood pressure is actually more minutes for a minimum, not less.
Really?
Yeah. But
why?
Well, because they need even more to get be active and really to help moderate their blood pressure.
Wow.
We always suggest seeking, you know, clearance from your doctor before you begin any type of, you know, an aggressive exercise program. But for generally normal physical activity, most people are cleaning, you know, doing household chores or doing things around the house. You know, we'd actually like the doctors to tell people who shouldn't be exercising ahead of time and make an assumption that most people should be.
Are there people who should not be exercising?
Yeah, well, you know, certainly if you're in the middle of a fever or, you know, a current what we call an acute illness where mm-hmm. you're running a temperature, if you're having chest pains, that would certainly be a condition where we'd want you to speak to your doctor before you started an exercise. Certain types of diabetics should have their blood sugars in safe ranges before they begin, like maybe having a meal an hour before they exercise, so they have time to digest. Those are the pretty biggies out there of making sure that you're healthy enough to do it in that moment.
Are there prescribed numbers? For example, some people may or you know belong to the gym and they will say, well, I go on the treadmill or I go on the bike and I need to get to X numbers of miles per hour to have a beneficial exercise, or is it just important to just get up and start walking? I don't have to get to 4.2 miles an hour, or I can just walk at 3 miles an hour.
Really, it's very individual because some things are different for, you know, certainly men and women with different leg lengths. You know, how fast you're walking can certainly have those pieces. A physical therapist or, you know, a trainer could certainly make an assessment of what is helping you reach it based on assessing your heart rate and your blood pressure to make sure you get there. But if you're just going to the gym, you really want to be, you know, walking at a if you're new to this particularly, walking at a comfortable speed where you, you know, if you're starting to feel like it's a little bit of a struggle to have a normal conversation, that's another, we could call it like the breath test mm-hmm. of seeing how hard you're working. And you should be able to have a conversation while you're walking as a good starting point.
So we're speaking with Kathy Ciolek, Assistant Professor and Director of Clinical Education at the University of Delaware, on the need for and how to involve oneself in keeping active. A couple of questions just popped into my mind because you just mentioned it. One, let's say you exercise, well, no matter where you exercise, eating a meal, breakfast, lunch, or dinner before you exercise, is that wrong? Is it better to just have something light? Is there a prescribed amount of time, let's say, that you should wait before you exercise after you eat, or none of it matters?
The biggest thing would be to make sure that, if someone is diabetic, that they've had a meal before they start doing something, and usually give yourself an hour or so to allow that food to digest and have your blood sugars even out. But for the most of the general population who aren't in the diabetic state, it's really a call as far as how do you you don't want to eat something where you feel like you have a lead balloon in your stomach before you start to exercise, but something really that kind of keep your body on an even keel is not a bad idea.
And how important is it you mentioned this before, to have a trainer, because I know this is something that a lot of people are going into now, have a personal trainer to set them up, if you can afford one.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a luxury? It's not a necessity, right?
It is not a necessity. Certainly as a physical therapist, one of the things I like to do with my older adult patients is, depending on what they come in for or if it's just really to get them on an exercise program, that is something covered through most Medicare Part B plans. So, an insured visit with a physical therapist to see if you're having a problem with walking or just really trying to look on to get started in a program, those kinds of exercise program initiations can be covered. And then, our goal is to get you on a program that you can take and do on your own. We're not into seeing people for life necessarily, although, it's great to be your physical therapist and you come back when you need me. But I want to give you things that would keep you healthy and moving without needing to see me all that often.
So, and how important is it for me to, if I want to think, somebody may be sitting there, well, I should do this. I'll go to the gym. I have to get this stuff and I have to get in a car and drive there. Do you need a gym or just is it? I can do I can start this at home. I don't need to go to the whole ball game there. I can do this at home.
Absolutely. The best method of exercise is going to be one that you will consistently do. Certainly physical activity, just doing things around your house, keeping your house clean and neat and mopping and, cleaning the windows, those kinds of things are going to keep you active. If you're looking for, an exercise program that meets the guidelines for, say, strengthening, which is another area that's slightly different than aerobics where you get your 150 minutes for, a strengthening program is ideally something that should be done at least twice a week. But that can absolutely be done in someone's home. There are exercise bands that you can get so you don't need weights. But the human body is a great source of resistance. Do a standing up from a chair can work the big thigh muscles in the front of your thigh pretty well if you're not doing that very often.
Yeah, I know a lot of friends, people I know, that their human body is quite resistant to exercise. they have no problem resisting it, but it's a very interesting concept. Kathy Ciolek, Assistant Professor and Director of Clinical Education at the University of Delaware, is our guest on this segment of Boomer Generation Radio here on WWDBAM 860. And this portion of Boomer Generation Radio, we remind you, is brought to you by Kendall, a system of not-for-profit communities and services that advocate for and empower older adults to reach their full potential. Kendall is committed to working with others to together transform the experience of aging. And to learn more about Kendall, and a reminder that it is KENDAL, we invite you to visit www.discoverkendall.com. Or call them toll-free at 888-759-0128. That's 888-759-0128. And that website, again, is www.discoverkendall.org. And I know that the Kendall communities, there's about eight of them in many of the states around here. that they talk a lot about, as a lot of these communities do, the power of socialization within exercise and doing this as a group as opposed to just going off, plugging your earphones in and just going off by yourself. Could you talk a little bit about the importance of doing exercise within a group and the socialization process that takes care, that takes part of that?
Sure. We definitely see that when people commit to a group exercise program, or even just have an exercise buddy, so somebody who's keeping them going on a regular basis, people are much more likely to stick with the program. But from, you know, just the socialization of, unfortunately, what we see a lot of times is adults, and certainly our weather this winter hasn't helped at all.
No.
You know, when you get stuck inside your home and you're not getting out, that can lead to depression and anxiety, certainly medical conditions that can be treated. But exercise is one of the things that we know can improve both mental health as well as cognitive health as physical health. And so the getting together with a committed group of people, you get socialization. You can certainly have new outreach for friends and at a time where, you know, it may be more difficult to make new friends in different communities.
So Kathy, here we are. I'm a person who worked in an office for 35, 40 years. I've sat there. I've raised my kids. But I really, you know, I put it on the couple of those extra pounds, et cetera. I really haven't really done any major exercise. I'm retiring now. I'm, let's say, 68 years old. I'm listening to the fact and reading these things that I should really get doing something, but I've never done anything. How difficult is it then to, how do you start? How do you turn? And I'm sure you've met with these people, these types of people.
Yeah, well, what I would like to do with, you know, say with you is, what do you like to do? Is there a form of exercise that's more appealing to you? You know, some people like swimming, and, you know, certainly then you need to have access to a pool, and whether it's indoor or outdoor in the time of year. Other people really are just walkers. You know, they enjoy a walking program. Fortunately, some of the, you know, the malls have created walking places so you can go in a climate-controlled environment, you know, throughout the year. So finding what is the best fit for trying to get that aerobic piece, something that's going to get your heart rate up. But again, it's what fits you best, and you're going to start kind of what we would consider low and slow. You know, if you haven't ever done it, certainly we would want you to see your physician, make sure there's no prohibition or any reason why you shouldn't be doing this, and then let's figure out how to get it on into a regular program. It, you know, it takes between 8 weeks to 12 weeks, so about 3 months, to really what we see is someone moving into a full commitment level and some motivational levels of change in behavior. But, you know, it is a great time, particularly as you're hitting retirement age, or where you're not necessarily on that tied to the work office 8 to 5 every day. It's going to give you, hopefully we can find a little bit of free time to schedule this into the other activities that you're doing.
There's a explosion here in technology around exercise. With these devices that you wear, bracelets, little things that you put in your on your belt or pocket that measure their pedometers, they measure your heart rate. The new Apple Watch evidently will make your life better than ever before. I think it will do everything for you, including check your heart rate, et cetera, et cetera. What's your? Do you recommend these things? Are they beneficial, or are they just gimmicks?
No, there's great evidence that's showing that, you know, keeping track of things, just like diet and weight loss, keeping track of your food intake or doing a food diary, helps with people committing to really recognizing how much you're eating during the day. Using a pedometer or the Apple Watch or a Fitbit, the Nike Fuel, there are some different devices that are out on the market
mm-hmm.
at different price points, you know, that track your steps per day, that track, you know, calories burned. You can sometimes link them if you have an iPhone or a smartphone to different programs on your phone to track your activity. Some phones even track, you know, how much you're moving during the day.
Some of these phones do everything.
They do a lot of different. They can track your heart rate.
They can
for you.
They're taking over. Eventually, there'll just be one big phone.
And, exactly.
That'll run everything, which may not be, given the way things are, that may not be such a bad idea.
It is not a bad idea. Like with telemedicine, we're getting all kinds of data from people, you know, who we don't even get to see necessarily
right.
on a day-to-day basis. But using those may help motivate you to meet certain goals. You know, if you're looking for how many steps per day are you doing, you know, there's this the 10,000 steps number that's out there.
Where did that come from? And is that made up or is that really based upon some science?
It's really based upon some science. It's just, it's a little difficult to obtain for a lot of people who aren't getting out of the house every day or, mm-hmm. you know, certainly those kinds of pieces. And one of my colleagues here at the university has looked at what do you need to do, say, if you have osteoarthritis and have some knee pain or hip pain? And they actually found that, you could probably get away with something in the 4,000 to 5,000 is at least, a target. So when I, as a physical therapist, am working with a patient, we're going to look at, I'll give them a pedometer to wear for a week so I can see what their average is. Mm-hmm. And then we set some goals. Can we increase it by 10% this week and try to get that activity level up? It doesn't have to be hitting 10,000 because I think that's an awful scary number for some people. It'd be great to get there, but let's just do 10% better than you're doing today.
Are there exercises that as we age, should stay away from? Are there things that really would really do damage to our bodies?
For the most part, your exercise is good. There, certainly if you have some disease states that you have to take into consideration, like if you're having a lot of shoulder pain, sometimes doing overhead stuff is not a great idea.
Right.
If you have osteoporosis, we don't encourage a lot of bending at the waist because that can put a lot of pressure on the spine if you're already at risk for fracture. So really it's very individual specific, so it's hard to make some big generalizations. But most people aren't working hard enough to get to that level unless they're kind of that weekend warrior where, they do nothing and don't stretch and don't train and then suddenly go and do, 8 hours of work on the weekend. Then I'm likely to see them with some musculoskeletal.
You just mentioned the magic word stretching. And before I do anything, how important it is, let's say I go to a walk on the treadmill, how important is it to take a couple of minutes and just before I jump on the treadmill or the bike or to do some stretching exercises so that limbs get some looseness?
The flexibility guidelines are, to really do some stretching of the major muscle groups for about a 30-second hold. You should be a little bit warmed up, though, before you start stretch. You don't really want to stretch a cold muscle. Some of the data used to say stretch, then do all these things. You might want to do a little warm-up, then stretch, mm-hmm. then get into your pieces. But it's a good one, even one repetition of a stretch for about 30 seconds
mm-hmm.
is in the target market. As people do start to age, sometimes we up that time to closer to 60 seconds to hold.
Wow.
Only because we know your muscles get a little bit more connective tissue and a little more stiff and need it a little longer hold to make some changes.
We're going to start to run out of time soon, and there's a whole bunch of other things that I want to go over, so just do it real fast. Lots of articles and information about the importance of weight training, using weights as resistance as opposed to just doing aerobics. Yes, no, do we alternate? What's the best formula for most people?
The general recommendations are some level of resistance or weight training twice a week for someone in the aging adult category. Versus the cardio or the aerobic we talked about, which is about 150 minutes over maybe 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
You can do both. You can take a day off from aerobic and do strengthening, but you should have at least 2 days or a day off in between any strengthening exercises.
Talk to me very quickly, if you can, about we just had a conversation in the first segment about new alternatives and housing arrangements. And one of the great challenges as we get older, obviously, is making sure that our house or where we live is fall-proof.
Mm-hmm.
Do you get involved with that and working with individuals and you in the stuff that you teach at UD about really allowing people to say, take a good look at where you're living in that environment? Because as you just move around, just doing the housework, et cetera, you want to avoid the carpet, the this that could call it a fall.
Absolutely. We look at fall risk. We do home assessments. There's a lot of therapists who do home health. So they're going into someone's home, which is a great time to have them check your home to see what's going on. Things like throw rugs, or area rugs are very popular. They need to either be made sure that they're very well tacked down so they're not a trip hazard. A lot of clutter. People who have lived in their homes for a very long time have accumulated a lot of stuff. So making sure that there's a clear pathway. Things like night lights. How, do we know what your vision looks like as you're getting older? And certainly gets more difficult to go to some light dark challenges. So, you know, are you going to be able to get to the bathroom? Is there a well-lit path or a night light that'll turn on when there's movement to give you a nice, safe, guided pathway to the bathroom?
Many of us, somebody once told me as we were developing some work on disabilities, that if we live long enough, everybody will have some aspect or some sort of disability to deal with. So this last question, people who are dealing with significant disabilities, who may be in a wheelchair or have some other major, major physical issues, how do they develop some sort of exercise program? There must be some way, I would assume.
Absolutely. We can do, there are exercise programs out there for people who are only going to do exercises sitting. There are some, you know, certainly some machines and physical therapy gyms, and then some exercise gyms that aren't going to take as much challenge getting on and off for somebody who may have limited walking capacity. But even from, a wheelchair, if you can lay down in bed, you can do some exercises. So we can design a program around somebody who's only able to really lay. We can do lie down. Somebody who can sit, we can certainly look at trying to do it, even just if they can't walk more than a certain distance, making sure we do things like, can they still transfer from like sitting to standing? Because that's an activity that you really need to do to be able to live independently.
And we have literally less than a minute, but I just want to mention, because you mentioned alternatives, water aerobics, I've seen this in gyms, worthwhile, correct?
Absolutely. Great. Great opportunity, if particularly with some people who have lower limb pain from arthritis. Those exercise classes will get your heart rate up, but they take some of that weight off your joints, which will allow you to do exercise more easily.
Well, Kathy Cholik from the University of Delaware, assistant professor and director of clinical education. Wow, we're out of time. Lots of great information, Kathy. Thank you very much for being with us on Boomer Generation Radio. I wish you continued success. And for all of you, have a great week. We'll see you next week on another edition of Boomer Generation Radio here on WWDB AM 860, WWDBAM.com. Take care. Be safe.